The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right, and it's a Friday. Yeah, that means the weekend is just about here in an hour. Well, actually more than that, because tonight I'm guest hosting the Bradcast. So a reminder, 8 p.m. Eastern, Brad Friedman's Bradcast airs on the Progressive Voices Network. He's on a bunch of other stations, too. And then the show is posted as a podcast at bradblog.com sometime tonight when I get around to it. It's a long day filling in for Brad and Desi. The show's done, by the way. I interviewed the author of this new book on climate change, a guy named Eugene Linden, and his book is Fire and Flood, A People's History of Climate Change from 1979 to the Present. So that's tonight on the Bradcast. You can hear it when it airs at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, or just, you know, go over to bradblog.com anytime at your leisure over the weekend and just click and listen, because that's how that works. Today, I've been excited about this interview for a while. We actually recorded it yesterday, to be honest with you, because Rachel Bitticoffer has a few things. She's doing some happy hour podcast today. I didn't ask for the details, so there's that. And two, she's got a young one who comes home from school at like 5:30, so we needed to pre-tape it anyway. So it worked out that way. So if you're not familiar with Rachel Bitticoffer, she gained prominence as a political scientist back in 2018 because she most closely predicted the blue wave that happened and how many seats the Democrats would pick up. And it was like 41, which was huge. You know, she was everywhere for a while. I saw her once on Real Time with Bill Maher, and I didn't like it, but I realized that's Bill Maher's doing. So anyway, what happened is earlier this week, she followed me on Twitter. So once someone follows you, you can direct message them. And I did, and I introduced myself and I thanked her for the follow. And I asked her if she would, you know, do me the honor of coming on the show. And she was just friendly and agreeable. And yeah, so when I got her on the line yesterday, before we started taping the interview, I'm telling you this for a reason. We were talking about, I don't know how we got on the subject, but radio. And she said, oh, so now you're going to tell me that back in the 90s, you know, you worked at a station and, you know, you helped break Alanis Morissette or something like that. And I said, well, actually, that's true, because I was on the air in LA at a station. We were very early on Alanis, and I was extra early, and I was singing her praises. I got to see a showcase, and she blew my mind. So I talked about her, and because I was such an early, loud cheerleader for her, she remembered, and her label remembered. And so as the record, as Jagged Little Pill, was going up the charts, like a week before it hit number one, when she was everywhere, she came into my studio and sat down and did an interview with me. And so, you know, it just came up in conversation. The reason I'm bringing this up is because I promote the show on Twitter. I wrote today, Democrats can retain control of Congress in the midterms, but we must work for it. Rachel Bitticoffer is my guest today. She has the roadmap for us to follow. Listen, and I gave all the, you know, stream information. Well, she retweeted it. And as she retweeted it, she wrote, in which storied LA radio jockey Nicole Sandler reminisces about her interview with Alanis back when LA radio launched her career. And I lay out how to stop a midterm effect. Listen, well, first of all, the conversation about Alanis was off the air before we started taping. And LA radio didn't launch my career. That happened, you know, in college in New York. And then I went to LA, but that's okay. Hey, she can say whatever she wants and it's fine with me. All right. So this interview runs most of the hour. I'm going to give you, we play the disclaimer at the beginning of the show, but I'm going to say it again now because let me warn you, you thought I had the filthiest mouth in town. Rachel Bitticoffer can curse me under a table, just so you know. So the language is a little salty, but you've got two women here who are very passionate about what we're talking about. So I guess with no further ado, we should get to it. Here we go. I think. Come on. I'm so excited for our guest today. Dr. Rachel Bitticoffer is a political scientist and so much more. You specialize in campaigns, elections, voter behavior, those kind of issues, right? How do you become a political scientist?
That's actually a really great question. No one's ever asked me that before.
Cool.
You know, I think it is helpful to have like two parts of like no fucking idea what you're doing, because otherwise you would never to subjugate yourself to the pain of pursuing a PhD in poli sci with the knowledge that almost certainly you won't end up as a professor with that degree anymore, because there's no jobs, right? So, so why does somebody go into poli sci? For me, believe it or not, Nicole, you're going to love this. Believe it or not, like the blog world was developing mm-hmm. when I chose instead to go to graduate school in 2009. And I was thinking to myself, well, I'd love to be a political analyst, like something like that. But I'm sure I will need credentials beyond I'm an undergraduate major in political science right. in order for people to take me seriously, you know. So I went to graduate school and then kind of gave up that idea to become a professor for a while. But it came back to me, and it's so funny, right? Because of the irony is that 6 years I spent becoming an expert, like an actual trained expert, other people just kind of skip that step. It turns out you don't need those credentials at all.
Tell me about it. We have imposters everywhere.
No shit, right? Dude. And turns out as long as I was an undergraduate major in something, I am now a political voter behavior expert. So
there you go. But you gained some notoriety. We all came to know you back in 2018 because you're the one who predicted this blue wave. You most accurately predicted what was going to happen in that midterm. And midterms are kind of hard to predict, aren't they? Or aren't they? Or are they?
So you know what? I was just at a panel recently with David Shore, and someone asked about, are elections easier to predict now? And I was, they're so fucking easy to predict, I can do it. So to answer your question, midterms have always been predictable. The midterm effect has always been a standard. I mean, it is one of the most powerful and regular patterns in poli sci of any discipline, of any focus in poli sci. And you know, in that regard, when I came out in 18 and said, hey, it's going to be a banner year for Democrats, everybody was understanding that. That's in the political analyst world, I think, pretty early on. What they didn't understand is how modern voter behavior has changed because of something called party sorting. We've had geographic and regional realignments, and we've had the radicalization of the Republican coalition, right?
Oh, yeah.
And partisanship is what we call a heuristic. So, like, it's often been celebrated, hey, Americans don't need to know much about politics or politicians or anything because they've got this party heuristic and it will give them a shortcut to fulfill their civic obligations. And so party has always been a really big indicator of what someone would do in terms of vote choice. But in this last 20 years, it has become almost a perfect indicator, to the extent where I can know nothing about you, Nicole, but if I know you're a Democrat or that you lean towards the Democrats as an independent, I can predict your vote choice 9 out of 10 times. And I don't even need a candidate. I don't need a nominee. I don't need anything. I just need to know that. And here's the fun part, is that your demographic demographics can also predict your partisanship. So based on that stuff and this thing called negative partisanship, which is not something I invented, it's just something I another scholar invented, and we don't actually aren't 100% sure who, just a little group of us that study that started talking about this concept called negative partisanship, which is the part when you have your identity as a Republican or a Democrat, some of that identity is grounded in what you think, feel, and believe about the opposition party, right?
Right.
And so when you think about negative partisanship, initially people were like, oh, what's more important, love of your own party or hate of the other? And what has happened over time is that hate of the other has become the driving factor, right? Yes. So in 2018, I was able to say, look, it's not just that Democrats are going to have a banner day. It's they are 100% going to flip at least 23 seats in the House. And that's what they needed for control. So control is all but a given. And then the question is, how big will the wave get? And I anticipated it'd be somewhere around 42 seats. And it was like 41 or something.
Right.
So, yeah, but it's, it, you know, it is based, it is a testament to what I want to really stress to people who are listening to this, you know, and I joke and I say, oh, you know, elections are so predictable, even I can do it. But the fact of the matter is this partisanship factor, the Republican system is designed around it and ours has not made that adjustment. And so I'm really trying to get people to understand how important and critical it is that we go into 2022 with a strategy that can meet this polarized moment.
Great. And that's exactly what I wanted to talk to you about, because I'm talking about Democrats, the people who don't want to see the Republicans get back any power because of, well, what will happen if when that happens. And I don't even want to think about it. So we need a strategy. And I hate to say it, but the party elders, let's put it that way, don't seem to have much of a plan. Am I off base in saying that?
Well, so one thing I want to stress, and this is another like turn I'm trying to get people to take that follow me or listen to me, is to understand like, okay, look, Schumer and Pelosi and Jamie Harrison, I mean, really and fill in the blank famous person that you know,
right?
Like they get advice. Right. And like they're getting advice from very well credentialed. I mean, certainly better credentialed than me, right? In terms of electioneering, as far as resumes go, people. So like, you know, it's not like Hillary Clinton ran the wrong campaign and didn't deliver for like, you know, people, da da da. She's given advice as to what to say, what not to say, what to run on, how not to run. She has no input at all on the voter targeting, the, you know, how the voter file is used. You know, the candidates are only going to be as good as the advice that they get. And that's why what I'm doing is such an uphill battle, because I like to think of it from the consultant's perspective, the people that I'm arguing we need to make changes with. You know, here's this person who's never done their job telling them this is how you should do your job, right?
Right.
I mean, it's obviously a tough pill to swallow. And then when you factor in me telling people, look, it's not about left, right, progressive, liberal. It's about brand ambassadors. They're running a branding operation against us. It doesn't matter if, you know, Katie Porter took a vote or did not take a vote on an issue. When they come after it, us on whatever the issue is, it will be Democrats, not Democrats, but not 10 of them.
Right, right.
Or Rick Scott's plan, right? It's just Republicans' plan, right? So getting people to understand, you know, yes, all these things that you're super passionate about, like there are ways to run on them and turn them into electoral wedge issues. That we've never done that. And I'm happy to discuss that a little bit more. But at the end of the day, the Republican Party's message is always, hey, voters on our side, be afraid, be a very afraid. If you don't vote, these people are coming for you. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then that same message is hitting the conversion pool. It's not a different message, it's the same message. And the conversion pool doesn't know jack shit. They don't follow politics. They don't read the news. They know nothing that you know. If you're listening to the show, your friends, your normal families, the muggles, they know nothing of anything except for what gets through in these imagistic brand assaults. And all they hear is Democrats are all socialists. and they're coming to defund the police.
And to eat your children, to your children. Sexually now, assault them and eat pedophiles. Them. Right, because yeah. they're all pedophiles. Yeah. Truth has no bearing. And, you know, I try to be fair. You know, this show, I'm an opinion host, but everything is based on fact, based on the news, based on reality. And if I ever get anything wrong, my listeners will tell you, I ask them to let me know so I can correct it, because I don't want to put out false information. Exactly. The other side has no compunction. They lie and they'll swear to it. They don't give a shit. So, and they have a media infrastructure to back them up, which makes it all the more dangerous. So we need people on our side to call them out on this shit. Do we have anybody doing it?
And here's the thing, Nicole, when they send an ad off to their lawyers, what they want to know is, will I go to jail and push this thing as far as you fucking can? Okay. When we send shit off to lawyers, man, make sure it meets the GOTUS standard ever, dude. Like, you know, leave no room. And I'm like, look, let's shoot for PolitiFact half true, because their record, I mean, unlike them, we don't have to lie to make them scary. Their fucking record is terrifying.
Right.
And the reason why other people aren't terrified about it, guys, is they don't fucking know, because we don't tell them.
They watch Fox or Newsmax or OAN.
Any of that. So, like, you know, if you want to know who our target audience is, I mean, just if you do anything civic, anything at all, that's a yarn or quilting group or a bowling league or, you know, the girl, Boy Scouts, mom troop, whatever, man. Pro these people for current event info. Okay. They haven't heard any of the shit that you've heard. If there's a tornado that wipes out 400 people, they'll hear that. You know, nowadays you got to kill 100 kindergartners to make the news on guns. Yeah. So, you know, something like that they'll hear. And then they get the monotone narrative. So during Trump era, that was Trump is scary and things are crazy. Right. Mm-hmm. And now with Democrats, it's inflation's bad and gas prices are high. Right.
The system. Never once do I hear anybody say, by the way, those are not problems unique to the United States. Gas prices are high around the world, as is inflation. I have a listener, Patrick, in Germany, who emailed me the other day, and he said, I'm so sick of all the whining. Yeah, gas is $4.25 a gallon in America. The equivalent amount here is over $9. So stop whining and elect better candidates.
No, did.
Hello? Yeah, right?
It must seem like so confusing to, I mean, I do talk to some international audiences. And the reason why it confuses them, guys, is like we're living in this fucked up absolutist like version of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights that have birthed us both a media and an election system that is not just different from our other European democracies and from our friends up north. It is dramatically fucking different. It's a completely unregulated winter wonderland of you can say whatever the fuck you want. Now, we don't do that, right? Mm-hmm. Because we're, and again, we don't have to. I'm not advocating that we just make shit up. We don't have to. We can just tell
exactly.
The Republican Party has a secret plan to raise your taxes and end Social Security.
And it's not so secret. They're saying it out loud. And I'm here in Florida, and that idiot, Voldemort, is our former governor, only to be replaced by somebody who's even worse. Death sentence. It's just crazy down here.
It really is, right? And like the Democratic impulse is like, well, we have to make sure you read these tweets that come out, and it's like, you know, Senator Rick Scott's plan.
Voldemort.
Plan, like, it's the Democrats' plan to defund the police, is it not?
Right.
It doesn't matter if you're Jamie Harrison, Abigail Spanberger, or actually one of the five fucking total Democrats that have ever had the words come out.
Right, exactly.
Capacity, right? Yep. You're getting saddled with it, and that's what I'm talking about when I'm talking about a brand assault, right? And in the midterm, this is what we're fighting. What drives these fundamentals of a midterm is twofold. There's the swing pocket, that small, pure pool of independents. They're not greatly informed people by the most part. They don't have a lot of interest in civics. and politics, which is why they're kind of, you know, agnostic. Some of them are highly engaged, but most of them are actually stupid as fuck. Okay?
Right.
And they go with whatever the prevailing wind is. And the prevailing wind is always against the in party. So our goal in 2020 is to make a lot of conversation and dominate a lot of news cycles in which the Republican Party and their shit show is the star of the show.
You mean in 2022? Because you just said 2020, and I don't want to relive that again.
Yes, 2022.
Got it. Right. Yes. And, you know, there is the thing, as we hit this year, I said, oh, no, it's 2022. Like, again, yes. It's just like, and it feels that way, doesn't it?
So. I mean, God, Nicole, I'm so glad you catch that. Like, hey, I have news for you all. If you watched with bated breath, as I did, the inauguration of our wonderful President Joe Biden under armed guard, completely closed off, apocalyptic Hunger Game looking fucking setting.
Yep.
And then like felt better, you know, I'm here to tell you that you should not be feeling any better at all. In fact, they have taken out all of the things that serendipitously protected the transfer of power last time, because it's the only reason we had the transfer of power is they just didn't have quite the radicalization down the state party levels that they needed it into these elections.
But they do now.
And they do now.
That's the thing that people need to understand. So the machine that Trump and his minions tried to put in place in process last in November of 2020, they have, or they're on the verge of having in place for not only 22, but certainly for 24, whereby they're replacing the local, what were used to be nonpartisan election supervisors or boards or whatever, with partisan actors who are rabidly Republican. And by that, I mean anti-democratic Republican.
Exactly right. And I mean, here's an apocalyptic scenario that, I, you know, there's a reason I was terrible at fundraising. I'm way too honest and blunt, right? And I'm not here to bullshit people. Like, listen, stakes are not policy. Like, okay, not that I don't care about policy, but now the policy is survival, right?
Yeah.
Survival of 245 years of our, our relatives, our friends and our neighbors. I mean, we have to preserve the American experiment, but also you think about all the millions of people who are unborn now, who may be born into a fascist country. You know, it's the stakes are really, really high in 22. So I have to be really honest with people.
Please. And right. That's what we need.
Midterm effect. Like this is what we know, right? We can measure it in two really reliable polling indicators that are aggregated, meaning they're collected from multiple sources, and then we're given an average for them. And one of them is called the generic ballot, which asks people, do you want to vote for a Republican or Democrat in Congress in the fall?
Right.
We do not have the advantage on that. We used to. We had it through the whole Trump era, through 2017 and on, and then predictably after Biden got into office and started doing the job over the course of 2021, that started a trend the other way, and it has now completely inverted. And it was inverted before when the Democrats were doing infighting and blaming Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema for everything in the world, even though there's still, you know, no 50 votes for Republicans. There's like no votes for Republicans, right?
Exactly.
So during the height of our sausage making ordeal, you know, it's one thing to kind of see this opinion come in such a negative way. But since then, we've actually seen like kind of an extraordinary event. I mean, Russia invading Ukraine, Putin and Biden has whipped together this coalition of NATO. They're just fucking killing it, right? Sanctions, nuclear bombs. And like Biden's doing really well. The economy is doing really well.
By all counts, right. Except in the news media and the narrative that the right is pushing.
Yep. And it's powerful because, like, you know, when they release data and it says, you know, why is oil prices high? And, you know, you have five responses, but the modal response, the one, the plurality is, you know, Biden. It's Biden's fault. Right. And it's 41% of survey respondents. The reason is, if you looked at the crosstabs, it's all Republicans, right? They like, Biden could like resurrect Jesus. Okay. And they're not going to say that he did a good job.
No. No. I mean, the absurd thing is Biden is a religious man. I'm not. But OK, so, you know, the Republicans are supposedly, you know, a lot of evangelicals. You would think the Catholic, the guy who goes to church every Sunday, the guy who wants to take communion or whatever it is they do, because I don't know, that they would go for him rather than the guy who held the Bible upside down and said 3 Corinthians or whatever he said, who never read a Bible and won't admit it. Yet they hold him up as the guy. I call it opposite world. Are you familiar with the concept of opposite world? It goes.
Oh, I am. That would be a good way of like, other than the word gaslight.
Yes. Well, it goes
everything Republicans do
like this here.
Everything you thought you knew, you never knew it all. Sideways is straight ahead. Facts no longer matter. Reality is now fiction. There's a signpost up ahead. Your next stop, opposite world.
Nothing makes sense, right? And I used to say I would debate a Republican because I am about issues. The thing is, they have to stipulate to the facts. Sky blue, grass green. And I can't find a single Republican who will say, yes, we breathe air, we drink water, and not the other way around. So you can't have an honest conversation with them because they don't understand honesty. But you're saying it's not even about that. It's more about the brand. It's more about how we package it and position it. They are so dug in deep. I just saw some guy doing a man on the street thing with people, I guess, at one of Trump's rallies. First of all, they asked about January 6th. And this couple wearing their Trump T-shirts said, he said, what do you think about January 6th? Oh, it was a lot of Antifa. You know, they were there stirring up trouble. Well, no, they weren't. And we know they weren't. But that's what they've been told so many times that they believe it. Right. Repetition breeds a new narrative. They believe it. And so how do we counter that?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing we need to understand, right? Like, this isn't Kansas anymore. It's not 1992. These folks have been subjected to not just months, not just years, but cycles worth of psychological warfare on them between the right-wing media and the right-wing electioneering orbit, and, you know, radicalized, frankly, right? So you can't de-radicalize folks easily. You can do it, not easily. Certainly not why Fox News continues to spew every night. Okay, that's just a given. Fox News outperforms CNN and MSNBC combined nightly.
Right.
Yeah, and it's just not, there is many components of, since Russia's dead, there are many components of right-wing media that should go, but all of those could stay and Fox News could go and you would see a difference, right? Because Fox is really that repetition machine. But it's beyond that. They understand how we behave. They understand our weaknesses. They understand the weaknesses of our media system. And they have designed a system that is based to exploit all those weaknesses, right? So what I'm arguing is, since they are just as predictable. I mean, I don't know, apparently other people don't know how they operate, and I've just happened to be weirdly interested in that. But they have a system that works really well. We can do it in a more responsible way. And we're certainly not advocating that we want to wage psychological warfare on people. But at the end of the day, guys, there's only 10% of America that would describe themselves ideologically as liberal. Okay. And if we're trying to persuade conversion voters, swing voters, to vote for us, or trying to drive turnout, we need to meet voters where they are. Okay. And where they are is self-interested. Okay.
Right.
They don't give a flying fuck about the collective, especially the white people, right? Like, if you want to hit people and make them care about your shit, then you got to put it in personal terms and you got to make it feel high stakes.
Right. Like, how this is going to help you. And the thing is, a lot of the ideas that they used to call, you know, far left and socialist, and Republicans still do just because of the branding, is actually mainstream now. Medicare for all, I think most people want universal health care. You know, they don't want their health insurance tied to their employer. They want to be able to, and it shouldn't be. Republicans don't want their employers to have to pay for their employees' health care. The thing is, it's how it's positioned, how it's put out there to the public. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong, because here's the thing is like, and this is an understandable strategy for the left to have taken. So like the last decade, what the left has focused on extensively is increasing the popularity of their policy proposals, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, getting them into the high 50s, 60s, even 70s, 80s on some of the shit, right? And in order to do that, what they have done is marketing that has been bleaching out the partisanship and the politics. Because they want when you want to mass market something, partisanship is a bad way to do it, right? And but the problem is, so they thought what would happen is if you make shit really popular, then the Republican Party has to move and respond on these issues, right? And that is where I'm coming into the understandable mistake component, because that assumes some things about the American electorate that aren't true, right? Number one, the election's not formed and engaged at all, right? Mm-hmm. They know nothing, as we've talked about. And, you know, if you think, okay, I've got this thing, Medicare for all or $15 minimum wage, and it's in the 60s, you know, Republicans are going to move over. You can only assume that under a body politic that is healthy, the mass mm-hmm. electorate, and an honest opposition party. Okay. And we have neither of those.
Exactly.
Things,
right? Exactly.
10 years ago, they were really moving very, very quickly in that direction. But, the literacy about what's happened with polarization and hyperpartisanship, even among analysts, is really low. So it's understandable why IEs and public interest groups and all these other groups working for policy just assumed, I just got to make shit popular, right?
Right, right.
And what we need to do now is that it is popular, right? So we can either cry in our lemonade, or we can make lemons at, or whatever, cry on our lemons and make lemonade. At, right?
right.
So we've got this shit now that's really popular, and now it's time to wedge issue it. And that's what I'm really focusing here on my post-strike pack work on, is teaching every group, candidate, entity that wants to work with me, how do you take something like healthcare and make it a powerful weapon, right? Make it in fucking possible for them to not support it. Or if they do, make it clear to the electorate, you don't have nice shit because of the Republican Party, right?
Yes.
And so what we need to do now is take our really popular shit and bludgeon them with it.
Okay. But so you mentioned,
make it clear who's to blame. And so like, and I'm going to mention this because you had said, oh yeah, you know, we need to tell them how this policy is going to affect them. That's kind of actually what the current, new strategy is. And what I'm saying is no. We hit them with something like, hey, that $600 you had a month for your kids, it's gone because of the
Republican Party. Right. Because they took it away from you.
They're the ones who fought
again. You know, you mentioned Strike Pack. So strikepack.com, this is the pack you formed to help do this. Tell us about it.
Well, I mean, I just left Strike Pack.
Oh, did you? Okay.
To go independent. And the reason I've done that is so that I can, so, you know, again, when we were talking about hyper rigidity in our coalition, that these ads not just have to be factually right on PolitiFact, it has to have every citation and the graphs have to be real, not like, you know, good looking and easy to understand. Like when I talk about that stuff, it also translates down to like hanging out with somebody who runs a super PAC, and it became an obstacle to me getting in as much strategy renovation as we can possibly get in, right? Because if we do not make a referendum theme and just hammer it home all through the cycle, then we are, we're up shit's creek. So we really need I'm really trying to spread myself around now.
Okay. So now, are you available? I couldn't find a website or anything. Are you available for hire? If a campaign wants to hire you to help them in messaging, to help them win an election, are you available?
So, you know, the public announcement was on the 2nd, just a couple days ago. And what I'm trying to do is fill out my 2022 dance card with entities, orgs, candidates, groups, whatever, that are going to best maximize my impact on strategy and messaging in many places as possible. Because the sad truth is, guys, with this midterm effect coming, those two indicators, the generic ballot and the other one's enthusiasm. So, you know, that how excited are you to vote enthusiasm and gap. which used to be us 10 points positive and now is them 10 points positive, and definitely isn't a false indicator because now we've seen what happens in Virginia. So we now know, I mean, yes, turnout was high, but it was higher for them.
Yep.
Right? Yep. So now we know it's coming, and the data doesn't lie. I mean, this is we are looking at somewhere between 20 and 30 House seats on these two indicators today. And if we drop them, we're going to lose Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania gubernatorial races. And that is,
oh my God,
a really hard pill for people to accept, swallow, whatever. But by September, people will realize it. It's just, I'm trying to get people to panic now because it's April and September is too fucking late to panic.
Yes, because
and
you
I
know
want
what?
To really illustrate like the 2024 cycle, like the difference between 2020 and 2024 are those Democratic statewides in those three Rust Belt Midwestern states. So it is a matter of, you know, extreme urgency that we go forward with an aggressive strategy that forces the Republican Party to play on defense, that does not give in to temptations to engage in wonky debates or substantive debates about the shit they want us to talk about, mm-hmm. even though it's really tempting. Because trust me, they know that. That's why they designed it that way. Right? Let's go and hit them hard. They just murdered, like, the data from red state to blue state on COVID management. It's an apocalypse, right? I mean, it's basically a red state apocalypse. I call the Arizona, Georgia, Florida, and Texas governors the four men, horsemen of the apocalypse, right? Because they killed so many fucking people. And a lot of them, guys, are essential workers. And it's true that a lot of them are Republicans who swallowed the propaganda and did not protect themselves. But almost every state, when you look down at the data, who's going to suffer from the lack of mitigation and piss poor efforts to statewide vax people? It's going to be your essential workforce.
Of course. And did you hear what Governor Moron death sentence did today?
No, I actually haven't.
Okay.
Me.
Check this out. DeSantis bars hospitals and nursing homes, hospices and other long-term care facilities from prohibiting family visits during a public health crisis or emergency and bans them from requiring a proof of vaccination to enter. So, you know, this is the man who told the kids, the high school kids, take off the masks. It's COVID theater. No, it isn't. And they're closing down all the COVID centers in the state because it's over. Really, if it's over, then why did Nancy Pelosi test positive today? Why eight more members of Congress tested positive today? It's not over. Just because you're sick of it doesn't mean it's over.
Death rate is seven times higher than D.C.'s, even though it's not. I mean, when you look at, when you control for the wave, the first wave, I mean, nobody fucking knows what's happening. This pandemic rushes in, it hits the two coasts, it ravages our major urban centers, right? Mm-hmm. But the second, like that first wave takes a long time to disperse through the rest of the country. And when it just gets going down in Florida and Georgia is when they fucking reopened everything, right?
And
they've had every wave, you know, going. But even if you just exclude that time period and look only at vaccination, you know, widely available time, that's when this difference becomes very, very stark. Because, you know, I'm not going to say all death of COVID is preventable right now, but almost all of it is.
The death is. Maybe not the transmission, but the death.
I'm not talking about breakthrough infection. Right. I'm talking about the thing that we needed to leave our houses again with some semblance of confidence, the thing that keeps us from dying, right?
Right.
And it's extremely effective. And, you know, DeSantis's record down there is he should be bludgeoned over the head with COVID mismanagement because he killed off old people. And where are all the old people in Florida? And he's coming for their Social Security, their Medicare, and their taxes, dude.
Right.
Like, it's
a
no-brainer. So, like, the fundamentals are shit for us, guys, and they're predicting this heavy seat loss. But the politics for us are fan-fucking-tastic if we just run into it.
Okay, so we need to run into it. We need to be just, and this is what I try to do every day on this show. And you can tell I don't hold back. I say what I think and I say it in no uncertain terms. But that needs to go on throughout around the country and from the people who are in Congress, you know, and so we need a sea change. So primaries begin in weeks. You know, May 3rd, we have, if my calendar is right, I think are the first primaries, and they're in Indiana and Ohio. Are we ready?
Oh, my expectation is we'll see declined turnout for Democrats across the nation in primaries. Like I said, the data doesn't lie. And we can change the data. It's like, I'm advocating for this. Let's not spend 3 months pretending maybe the midterm effect isn't real and that it will magically go away.
And quickly, the midterm effect, in plain English, the midterm effect is the party that comes and takes power in the first midterms, that party loses big time. Right?
And I'm advocating for this. Like, this is a fact. We shouldn't even bother to debate it. And we know for sure that reality isn't moving public opinion because we just saw 2 months of it. So, given this reality, instead of debating whether it's going to happen, why don't we just accept it and build a strategy that's aimed directly at interrupting it?
Okay, so how do we do that? Now, the House is virtually tied. There's like 3 or 4 seats different. So it looks like the Democrats will lose control of the House in 2022. For those who don't know, every member of the House of Representatives is up for election every 2 years. The Senate is cut in thirds. So every 2 years, a third of the Senate is up for election. So how are we positioned? The House, I think we're in trouble. The Senate, how are we looking?
Well, again, you know, if you lose 20 seats in the House, then you will not be holding the Senate, and particularly vulnerable down in Georgia and Arizona. Mm. All right. We have a couple. The Senate is, if we only had this Senate map in 2018, the Democrats would have had a double wave. It would have been in both chambers. So it really is contingent to the races. Mm-hmm. Our best pickup opportunities are actually in those two of the three Midwestern blue belt states, Michigan and has the Whitmer reelection.
Right.
And then in Pennsylvania, they have a governor's race, and they've got an excellent candidate front runner for that one. The problem is that elections are determined by coalitional turnout and who best dominates that conversion pool. The conversion pool is going to break 55-45 roughly in favor of the GOP just on in-party fundamentals. We can change that, though, by hammering that pool of people with messaging that makes them fear change, makes them fear the Republican Party. And that should not be hard to do, because all we have to do is tell them the things that the Republican Party is doing.
Who is the person who can tell them those things, though, that they will believe? Who do we have?
So, like, you know, I mean, here's the thing. You think about the media ecosystem and the Republican advertising system. They are never talking about themselves. They're always talking about us. So the easiest way for me to answer this question for a lay audience and to give people something actionable is start to listen to yourself. How much are you talking about us and policy and all the shit that we like to talk about versus them? Because what I need is every motherfucker talking about the Republican Party, right? When people say, oh, well, Congress didn't pass Build Back Better, you have to hit them back and be like, that's because Republicans, right?
Right.
You have to tell them that the Republican Party is coming for all of their shit, right? Their health, their wealth, and their security, and make them feel afraid.
Right. Okay, so we need to be fact-heavy. We need Rick Scott's New Republican plan to make Social Security and Medicare expire every 5 years. So you have to renew. I mean, it's insane. He wants to take away what little social safety net we have left.
Yeah, and imagine if I could teach you to say the Republican Party secret plan, right?
The Republican Party secret plan.
Right? So everybody say it with us.
The Republican Party secret plan.
Okay, the Republican Party secret plan to raise taxes and end Social Security and Medicare, right? And if we could say that, and then, you know, the people listening to this say that, and then the news people started saying that, and the party people started saying that, and you're asking me how it happens, and I realize this sounds pie in the sky, guys, but the stakes are the survival of the American experiment, okay? So I have no choice but to be pretty fucking bold in my vision, and what I'm telling us is we need to talk talk about them. We need to always be talking about them. We need to hammer some of these catchphrases at them the way that they do to us. And, you know, it is easy to say, well, we can't do it because we've never done it. And that's really where
but
we've been
have.
For years.
But you know what? Rachel Bitticoffer is our guest. And just think back 12 years. We just had Obama visit the White House to commemorate the 12-year mark of passing the Affordable Care Act. Well, I don't know if you I'm sure you remember, but Alan Grayson was a congressman from down here in Florida, and we still quote him 12, 13, 14 years later. The Republican health care plan is don't get sick. But if you get sick, the Republican health care plan is die quickly.
That's exactly right.
And that's true.
That's the fucking slogan. Like, ran with that, right?
Yes.
So what I'm, Nicole, you could not have mentioned something better. And this may end up in the book, okay?
Yay.
That is so true. And at the time, if Twitter existed and I had been a thing on it, I would have been like, that's the slogan. That's you know, so Republican cool. health care plan, don't get sick. And if you do, die quick.
Yes.
It's not hard. And you know, so when you say we've done it before, we have had these conversations for decades. Okay?
And we now have the Affordable Care Act. I have health insurance.
What I'm saying is now it's time for the system, which is a decentralized mess, so it's not natural for us. But we can do it. We're a party of incredibly smart people who most of people who have organizing experience. We can fucking do this, guys. The secret Republican plan to raise taxes and end Social Security and Medicare. Say that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and now we need somebody to lead the party. Now, hopefully we can all do this. We can all do our own metaphorical die quickly thing. But then we got to look forward to 2024 because it's right around the corner and we do have a problem. You know, here's the thing that gets me. Joe Biden is 79. Donald Trump is only 4 years younger than him. That's at that age, that's nothing. When you're 2 and 7, that's a big deal. But at 75 and 79, I'm sorry, there's no difference there. How did we let them reposition Joe Biden to be the feeble old coot when Donald Trump is out of his fucking mind?
I love that you mentioned this too, because God, it just gets such a great way to illustrate this concept. Yeah, guys, we all watch Donald Trump bragging on camera about, you know, his fucking whatever. Alzheimer's
man, woman, man, person, man, woman, camera thing.
Yeah, right?
Right?
Like, and yet, here's the thing. The public opinion data don't lie, right? When you poll about feebility, it's Joe Biden that carries that brand,
right?
who's mentally slow, okay? And the reason it's important for you to understand like how that is because when I said that our side is especially tuned out of news and information, no one sees any of the shit that we see. They never have any of these conversations. Their algorithms on Twitter have no politics in them. And our job is we must tell them if we want them to know, because yes, that's how much that informational differential is between the right and the left. And it's not just their distribution network, though, and it's a big factor in it. It's not just that. It is that we are naturally more heterogeneous. We are naturally more likely to be doing other shit than watching old people news.
Yes.
Yeah. So we have to get that information. It can be in 7-second digital ads, which I call flash branders, my style. They can be on Hulu. They can be on YouTube. It can be on Reddit. But like that's where the people that we need to hit are, and we have to hit them hard.
This is such good stuff. And my listeners are right there with you. I promise you this. I mean, it's just common sense. Again, what do we do looking forward to 2024? Because whether Joe Biden is more feeble minded than Trump or not. Look, I remember talking about Trump probably having syphilis and it affecting eating away at his brain. He was so out there and ridiculous and stupid. He suggested that we inject bleach to treat COVID. I mean, come on, man.
Or nuke a hurricane. Explain to him.
We could go on and on for hours. Yet that shit didn't cut through, right? So what do we do about 2024? Because I don't think we're well positioned with a candidate.
Yeah, no, we're not well positioned with a marketing apparatus. Right. And we don't have it. We can't wait till the 2024 cycle to fix it.
No.
We got to fix it right now or that midterm effect is going to eat us alive, right?
Yes.
But at the end of the day, that's literally what I wake up and live, breathe, and fret about constantly is how do we... What can we start changing? To me, the answer of, we've talked about that. We've never done it. It's hard. We can't organize. We're Democrats. We're not organized. Like, I'm like, no, fuck you. Right. We're going to do it. Like, there's no, you're telling me the people, some of the smartest people in the country, some of the most talented people in the country in this party. And we're getting our asses wiped by these morons, dude. No, I just can't. I can't have it, dude. No. We got to win.
Yes. All right. So this is our mission. Should you care to accept, don't take the bullshit anymore. Turn it around. And look, you know what? I'm guilty of it. Because if I'm doing news, I would rather focus on the amazing speech Jamie Raskin made on the floor telling Marjorie Q. Greene to shove it up her ass. Here are about the details of Rick Scott's secret plan to kill Social Security and Medicare. But I guess I need to focus more on Rick Scott and the Republicans' secret plan to kill Social Security and Medicare.
Yeah, here's a good barometer for any progress. And you're not alone. This is all through liberal and mainstream and progressive media. Okay, it's just our nature and the system that we've created. And so therefore, to change it, it's like quitting a habit. We have to actually do it intentionally.
Right.
And so for me, whenever you're putting something together, whoever you are, if I'm talking to Nicole and the broader public too, like ask yourself, is this topic hurting Republicans? Like, am I shining light on the Republican Party, or am I preaching to the choir, talking about something that's never going to happen anyway? Because right now we really just need everybody rowing in one direction, and that direction is to highlight in every way, shape, and form what the fuck is happening in the Republican Party and what will happen to America if they take control.
Got it. I need to ask you about one other thing that I know you've written about, you've talked about, and that is stop giving us these namby-pamby Republican-light blue dog assholes. Stop electing the Joe Manchins and the Kyrsten Sinemas. Get real Democrats, people who will stand up and say, I'm a Democrat and I'm proud of it. Whether they want to call themselves progressive or not is one thing, but they can't be Republican light. Because if they try to win on those terms, the people who want that are going to vote for the Republicans.
Exactly, dude. But here's the thing. All right, I want to make something very clear. Joe Manchin, like the behavior that he does, and I know people, it's because he's got this money and this thing and that. No, guys, he's in a fucking Trump plus 35 state.
Well, that's true.
He's the last Democrat that will come out of West Virginia in a century.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
He's a historic leftover, too. So if you get rid of Joe Manchin, that seat is Republican.
Is red. Right.
Yep. He is the 50th. You would not be confirming the judge today because you would never have had confirmation hearings about Joe Manchin. So he's not completely fucking useless. Kyrsten Sinema, on the other hand,
is completely fucking useless.
Rationale. Okay, I got nothing on that. But let me tell you, every time we're talking about those two as being the impediments to progress, we're doing so with this base knowledge that actually the real problem is this Republican opposition.
Yeah, there are those two, but all 50 Republicans.
We make the assumption that that's what people hear, that is hearing our voice, and that is not what they hear, guys. You have to make that connection clear to them that no, it's actually, the Republicans are filibustering this thing. There could be two that could vote for any thing that Joe Manchin and Sinema are holding up, right? The reason, by the way, Joe Manchin is doing this shit is because he has to at least occasionally behave like a Republican, because that's whose electorate is. It's, Trump won the state by 80%, or so he has like 80-30 or something, or 80-20. So, it's electorally disincentivized, and we really don't do that. We assume the audience understands the unspoken elephant in the room, and we define everything internally. Do you see what I'm saying?
I do.
So the focus is on the internal issues, and it ignores or does not provide the broader context that we're living in a very atypical time period, that the Republican Party has collapsed into chaos. It's a decay that started way back in 2010, with purging of moderates for extremists and that gerrymandering process. And now we're bearing the fruits of a system that has been radicalized nonstop and without any pushback from us. us for 10 years. So, you know, voters don't know the Republican Party is an extremist party, and we have to tell them.
We must. Rachel Bitticoffer, I could talk to you for hours. I can't thank you enough for joining us today, for following me on Twitter so I could contact you.
Are
so,
you kidding? It's my, I mean, oh, I'm the one that's God. Privileged. I mean, I got to say, like, the 1990s me would be like, damn, I'm talking to Nicole Sandler on the internet. What the fuck is that? No, right. I would have been like, oh my God, I made it big. So, girl,
well, I'm gonna send you my Alanis Morissette interview from the 90s. And so do. Now, if a campaign wants to hire you, you said you're looking to fill your dance card. How do they find you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying, you know, I'm not trying to turn anybody off, but I do want to make things clear. I'm a woman on a mission, and that is a mission that I take very seriously. So I am definitely working and looking to work with anything that's in competitive places that can help us hold 51 seats in the Senate and yes. 217 in the House.
Please.
If we have those two numbers on November 8th or whatever of 2022, you know, this year, then we will have performed a fucking miracle. Okay,
yep, absolutely.
Just to hold those two. So that's the truth. Of the cycle, and I'm really keen to get involved in every way I can in improving the probability of that.
Okay, so they should find you on Twitter. They should contact.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, I think I'm findable. I don't think I'm like share, you
right,
know, but
right.
I don't have an email. I have open DMs on Twitter.
Okay, because, there you go.
MAGA world doesn't have. They're too fucking wussy to mess with me, so I don't even have, you know, really bad DMs.
And, okay. Cool. Just because, you know, every Thursday I speak with Howie Klein. Howie Klein runs the Blue America PAC and is in the business of finding the best progressive candidates. And he's got some really good ones that who knows. So, you know, maybe we can make a connection here.
Rachel, yeah, feel free. I mean, this is, again, the dance card needs to fill, but it needs to fill in a way that I can. I'm basically building a shield operation through my endeavors. I know what the party's going to do. I know how they're going to do it. And then I'm trying to supplement the shit that will be missing, which will be everything that we want to push the referendum effect towards the GOP.
Got it. Perfect. You're so needed right now, and I'm so glad you're rising to the occasion. Rachel Bitticoffer, I'll put her Twitter handle up on the blog where I post the show. It'll be at NicoleSandler.com/4-8-22. That's when this airs. Rachel, thank you so much. This has been awesome, and I hope we can do it again.
No, happy back, and thanks so much, Nicole.
Yeah, so I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. She's great. And yes, she gives me a run for the money in the cursing department. So I for once, someone with a bigger potty mouth than I have. How about that? I hope you got a lot out of that. So here's our lesson. The Republican secret plan to kill Medicare and Social Security, we need to point out and drive home the heinous shit they do. I get it. It's, what did she call it? Negative partisanship. Okay. It makes sense to me. It really does. All right. We've got like 3 minutes left. It's a Friday. And, you know, I thought, there's a new Pink Floyd song, the first official release from Pink Floyd in 20-something years. It's called Hey, Hey, Rise Up. Do you remember a few weeks ago, I played for you the Kiffness, an artist from South Africa who I found during the pandemic, who samples sounds and mixes them together. Well, he took the vocals of this guy, Andriy Kavlil, something of the band Boombox, a Ukrainian rock star, and he mixed it together and created a new song, and all the revenue he raised for that goes to Ukrainian relief. Well, Pink Floyd's new song is also using that same guy's song, his singing. I'm not going to play it here because I don't want to get copyright violated, but I will post the video on the blog where I put the show. It'll be up at NicoleSandler.com/4-8-22. All right. So, well, that does it. We're done with this week. What a week it was, too. Can I just say one last time, Ketanji Brown Jackson, how awesome, awesome, awesome is she? She's exactly what we need right now. Unfortunately, we've got to wait until the end of the term for her to become Justice Jackson, because what's his name? Boy, how quickly I forget. The guy she's replacing is staying through the end of the term. All right, somebody's calling. Hi, who's this?
Yes, this is Marcus in Las Vegas.
Hey, Marcus in Las Vegas. What's on your mind?
First of all, I'd like to thank you for your guest. I don't know her name, but I'd like to find
her
some
name
kind
is
of way to
Rachel,
get in touch.
Rachel Bitticoffer, and you can find her on Twitter at Rachel, RachelBitticoffer.
BITEC
like Charlie, OF like Frank, ER.
Okay, got it.
Got it.
I know there's only a couple of minutes left, but you guys are right on. You're spot on. More than anything else, the Democrats need to hammer their home to the American people what the Republicans are, who they are, using their own words.
Exactly. Exactly. They do it very effectively. When they call us the radical liberals, you know, there's nothing radical about what we're doing. It's just in the positioning. It's the marketing. And I hate to say it, that's what Donald Trump, as demented as he is, that's the one thing he's good at. Marketing, positioning, branding. And that's where we're lacking. That's where we need to pick it up.
I do not understand why I have not seen a clip that shows Ronald Reagan or George Bush out of their own mouths saying, I want to repeal Social Security. That actually, they never said that. The word that they used, when the House voted against the ACA, they were literally in the Rose Garden or outside the House with ear-to-ear grins. They were beside themselves with joy. They need to show that video clip and the video clip of Rick Scott. Put them all together, run a montage.
Yeah, good idea. All right. Well, we'll work on that, Marcus. Well, thank you for calling. I saw you called during the interview. This was on tape, so I couldn't bring you in then. So I'm glad you called back. Rachel Bitticoffer is, you know, she's out there. She's been around, and she's got her name in the political science world. So I did. I introduced her and Howie Klein last night via email, and I believe they spoke. So hopefully, you know, hopefully she can work with some of those candidates.
She's spot on. It's very refreshing to hear somebody who's telling it like it is. I mean, this is what needs to be told. You know, this is what we need to do. And I just want to support her. I want to join her.
Great. All right. Well, tweet at her. So that's the best way to get her right now is on Twitter at Rachel Bitticoffer. And again, I'll put the link to her Twitter feed on the blog where I post the show. It'll be at NicoleSandler.com/4-8-22. But Marcus, I got to run because the show's over and I have to do the broadcast.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right. And you have a great weekend, everybody. So the broadcast coming up. And then Monday, David Dayen will be here from the American Prospect. It's always a jam-packed show full of information when David Dayen is here. So we got that to look forward to. Thanks for listening, everyone. Have a great weekend. And remember to talk about the Republican secret plan to kill your Medicare and Social Security. All right. I'll see you Monday. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
On this vote, the yeas are 53, the nays are 47. And this nomination is confirmed.
And with that, the Senate, Thursday afternoon, confirmed Ketanji Brown Jackson in a historic vote that will make her the first black woman to serve on the highest court in the land. The final vote was 53-47, with Republican Senator Susan Collins of Maine, Mitt Romney of Utah, and Lisa Murkowski of Alaska joining all the Democrats to vote yes. Jackson will be sworn in after Justice Stephen Breyer retires this summer after the current term ends. Until then, she'll remain in her current position on the U.S. Court of Appeals. Jackson will also be the first former federal public defender to serve on the Supreme Court. The court will now have two black justices and four female justices for the first time. And for the first time in history, white men will not make up the majority of the U.S. Supreme Court. President Biden tweeted, Judge Jackson's confirmation was a historic moment for our nation. Unfortunately, the 6-3 conservative majority remains unchanged. Our second story today deals with the guest that just won't leave, COVID. There seems to be a swarm of new infections in D.C. with a bunch of new cases reported in the days since last Saturday's Gridiron Dinner, which is a major D.C. media event. Well, we know that the new variants of Omicron are highly contagious, but this is ridiculous. First, we learned that cabinet members, Attorney General Merrick Garland and Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo, Congressman Adam Schiff and Joaquin Castro, and at least half a dozen journalists all tested positive after attending the event. On Thursday, Speaker Nancy Pelosi released a statement saying that she had tested positive for COVID-19, although she's not suffering any symptoms. And the names keep coming. Representatives Angie Craig of Minnesota, Peter DeFazio of Oregon, and Senator Raphael Warnock of Georgia also tested positive. By the way, Senators Collins and Warnock were both in attendance on Thursday for Judge Jackson's confirmation vote. Collins was one of the few in the chamber who wore a mask. Warnock did not. As for new COVID relief, well, senators on Thursday admitted that they're delaying voting on a bill to put another $10 billion into pandemic programs until after their two-week spring break. Really, top administration health officials have said that further threatens the country's ability to fight the virus and prepare for potential surges and even more variants. But there is some good news to report. A federal appeals court on Thursday upheld President Biden's coronavirus vaccine requirement for federal workers, reversing a lower court ruling against the mandate. Biden said in September that the vast majority of federal employees would have to get vaccinated or face discipline when a district judge in Texas blocked the policy in January, saying that Biden couldn't make workers, quote, undergo a medical procedure as a condition of their employment. But by that point, 95% of federal workers were already vaccinated. Well, now, a panel of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit in New Orleans ruled 2-1 that Brown lacked jurisdiction, and they ordered that the lawsuit challenging the mandate be dismissed. Got it? Okay. Moving on to the war zone. A Russian strike on Friday hit a crowded train station where civilians were evacuating from the Donetsk region, killing dozens and injuring hundreds. Upwards of 8,000 people were inside the station when the missile struck. The Donetsk region was being evacuated, and this train route was supposed to offer a safe harbor to safer areas of the country. The Russians knew that this train station was being used to evacuate civilians. And this attack comes as Russia continues shelling cities in the east and south of Ukraine. Although Russian troops have, quote, fully withdrawn from northern Ukraine to Belarus and Russia, that according to the UK's Ministry of Defense. So from the what can we do about it files, the United Nations General Assembly voted Thursday to suspend Russia from the Human Rights Council. It was a very rare rebuke of one of the five countries with veto power on the UN Security Council. Now, I know that's not what President Zelensky had asked for. He wanted Russia expelled from the Security Council, but that's easier said than done. So I guess this is the next best thing. Russia's deputy ambassador said after the vote that Moscow had pulled out of the Human Rights Council before the vote and said that the council had been taken over and politicized by countries with their own, quote, blatant and massive violations of human rights. There are no words. But Congress is acting when and where they can. The Senate on Thursday unanimously approved two bills that would suspend normal trade relations with Russia and ban Russian oil imports. The House backed the latest version of these proposals with a little bit of opposition, sending them to the president for his signature. There had been a bit of a standoff recently, but momentum picked up again after evidence of Russian atrocities in Ukraine surfaced over the last few days. Closer to home, New York's attorney general has asked a court to hold the former guy in contempt for allegedly failing to comply with a court order that he turn over certain documents for an investigation. So the Office of Attorney General Letitia James filed a motion on Thursday saying that Trump did not comply at all with the subpoena for documents and that his attorney said he would not produce any documents in response to the subpoena because his attorneys believe that if the documents exist, the Trump Organization would have them and the Attorney General's office, quote, will just have to wait until the Trump Organization completes its production to get them. Huh? James is asking the court to impose a fine of $10,000 a day or whatever amount the court deems sufficient to get Trump to comply. Meanwhile, the criminal investigation into Trump and his company is also allegedly continuing, as Manhattan's new district attorney said on Thursday that the investigation is still in progress and they're reviewing new evidence. Yeah, we'll wait and see. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, in an interview on Thursday with Jonathan Swan of Axios, said he would still support Donald Trump if he's the 2024 Republican presidential nominee, despite having previously called him, quote, practically and morally responsible for the January 6th insurrection. When Swan asked if there's anything a Republican nominee could do to lose his backing, McConnell was stumped. Amazing. And finally, the U.S. is not the only nation looking down the barrel of a right-wing authoritarian takeover. The general election in France is right around the corner. 12 candidates qualified this year, so they all compete in a first round of voting happening this Sunday. The top two vote-getters from that round then go to a runoff 2 weeks later. That's it. No electoral college, no candidates saying they'll only accept the results if they win. Frighteningly, at this stage, it looks like the two finalists will likely be a repeat from the last election, a contest between the current president, Macron, and his ultra-right-wing opponent, Marine Le Pen. There are no words. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is completely listener-funded, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.